Welcome to this analysis that I call the oil emergency of 2026 and 2027. I'm Mike Adams, and I want to give credit to Dr. Chris Martinson, who did an outstanding analysis of the oil situation and the accumulating shortages, but also Mike Rothman of Cornerstone Analytics and Rick Rule. They were part of an interview that I found that was also very observant. And so I took their work and then I dug a lot further. I expanded it. I unleashed some AI agents to do more research from all three of those people. And then came up with what I'm about to present to you today. I'll try to keep it as simple as I can, but this topic is a little bit complex. So bear with me here. And the first thing to start with is that we've been told year after year that there is a massive oil glut, that there's 1 billion barrels of oil floating around on the ocean somewhere, just on the ships. I mean, I'm simplifying it, but that's been the narrative. It turns out that was always a lie. There isn't an oil glut. And of course, because of Trump's war with Iran, that has rapidly transitioned into an oil emergency, oil scarcity. So used to be maybe 3,000 tankers a month would go through the Strait of Hormuz, and now that's collapsed down to less than 5% of that number. And about 20 million barrels per day of crude oil and refined oil products would normally go through the Strait. That number is down, obviously, considerably, depending on the estimates that you look at. It could be down as much as 80 or even 90%. So almost 20 million barrels, let's say 16 million barrels per day of crude and refined products is missing from the world stage. And the thing is, the amount of oil that's missing adds up every single day. This is something that Chris Martinson really pointed out, that if this extends another month, you know, you're talking about hundreds of millions of barrels of oil that are missing from the economy, not to mention the natural gas, the urea, the fertilizer, and the other products like helium and sulfur that are also missing from the world stage. And the bottom line is, because these are missing, it can't be just instantly created out of thin air like waving a magic wand. There's no instant recovery from this. And for each day that goes by, it's going to result down the road in some number of people going hungry or some amount of industrial output being crippled or being impossible because of the lack of energy. And what's even crazier about this is that, of course, Trump and his administration officials are manipulating public perception, manipulating the paper spot price of oil to keep it artificially low, to try to create the impression that gas is affordable, etc., which is causing the U.S. to sell off its strategic petroleum reserves at an artificially low subsidized price to foreign buyers. So we are draining our strategic reserves, shipping the oil out to foreign buyers, shipping it to other countries. Remember, Trump was bragging about, they're all coming to the Gulf of Mexico to get our oil. Yeah, to get our artificially low-priced subsidized oil that's effectively subsidized by the American taxpayers, ultimately, which means that the American people are paying, in part, for the oil that's being used by other countries. Trump doesn't tell you that, does he? No. Meanwhile, our reserves are plummeting at an alarming rate. And this was not the whole, this isn't the reason to have strategic petroleum reserves, not to sell it to other nations at a subsidized low price. That's a perversion of the whole purpose of the SPR. The purpose of the SPR was to have oil in times of war if oil supplies were cut off. You know, oil for America. So the bottom line here is also that oil is not only massively underpriced, especially according to Rothman's analysis, but that it could go into the range of $180 to $200 per barrel within several months, or let's say towards the end of the year. Let's say the fourth quarter of this year, you could see oil at $180 a barrel or even higher. And this is a rigorous analysis. And what Rick Rule points out is that you also need sustainable capital. You need capital liquidity in order to be able to fund projects, including farming. Food production requires borrowing money. Oil exploration requires borrowing money. Building pipelines, borrowing money. Shale exploration in particular is extremely expensive. And without the capital liquidity to fund these kinds of projects, even if there are much higher prices, let's say, for oil, you can't just quickly respond by building a shale exploration or shale exploitation facility. It doesn't happen overnight, especially when there's no capital available or the costs of capital are much higher than they had been historically. And so between those two things, well, I guess it's three things. The global oil shortage that's getting worse by the day, combined with the inevitable rise in oil prices, combined with the lack of capital liquidity, we're facing a convergence, a superstorm, an economic superstorm that we have never experienced before. And it's going to be bad. Now, here's what else you need to know about oil and shale, is that a typical oil well will lose about 5% of its output per year if you don't maintain them. And if you just keep pumping, 5% per year disappears. And right now, the capital expenditures on oil infrastructure, almost 90% of those capital expenditures are spent to maintain existing oil fields or shale fields or even gas fields. It's just to try to stop the natural decline. You know, you have to inject gas in order to push pressure through the fissures and keep some at least low pressure oil flowing through the system, for example. And there are a number of methods to do that. It's a very complicated science, actually. But it requires billions of dollars every year just to keep the oil flowing out of existing wells. And when you have a lack of capital liquidity or a higher cost of capital, and by the way, the 30-year treasury is now, I think it's over 6% in America, and the 10-year is, I think it's over 4.5%. It's creeping up towards 5%, which is, that's where alarm bells will start ringing. But even in the oil industry, capital costs are rising. So as capital costs rise, that means it's harder and harder to be able to service the loans that are necessary for the capital to flow into the maintenance of the oil extraction projects. So that means you're going to have less maintenance. You're going to have lower output of the existing wells by, again, roughly about 5% per year is what happens if you don't have good maintenance. On top of that, if any of the oil wells in the Middle East stop producing, that is, if they're shut down because there's a glut of oil, and we've talked about this, some people suspect that's the case on some oil wells in Iran right now because they're flaring off some of the oil wells. Well, if you ever stop the flow in a mature, especially a low-pressure oil field, if you stop the flow for an extended period of time or even as little as 4 days, you start to permanently lose throughput because you get water that mixes in with the oil, or you can get paraffin clogs, and all kinds of weird chemistry happens underground that starts to clog up all the fissures. And you end up with potentially a loss of 20 to 30% permanently from that well. And that can happen, or it can begin to happen, in as little as 4 days. Sometimes it can happen over a period of a few weeks or a few months, but you don't really know until you reopen the well and start pumping again and you see what you can get out of it. Sometimes the well comes right back and you're like, yay, and you get 100% back. Other times you get 60% back and you don't know until you try. So it's a crapshoot right now of how much oil is going to come back out of these wells if they are shut down, even for a short period of time. And so when you put all of this together, what you realize is that there's going to be an oil shortage for many years to come, even if the Strait of Hormuz is reopened again. And this is part of what's feeding into the projections of oil moving much higher in price toward the $200 a barrel level. So according to the IEA, which, by the way, that's the International Energy Agency, this was established after the oil crisis of 1974. So the IEA is kind of the official, you know, number tracker of the oil industry, even though it's an NGO itself. It's not part of any government, but it's an industry group. It's actually headquartered out of Paris. And the IEA sort of tells the world how much oil there is and how much excess capacity there is and how much oil is on the water, etc. Well, of course, the IEA, like any organization, has been heavily politicized. Politicized to keep the price of oil artificially low. And the IEA estimates that there are something like 4 or 5 million barrels per day of excess oil capacity in the Persian Gulf region. That is, that countries like Saudi Arabia could tap into if they needed to. And also it mentions the UAE as being part of that. However, however, what Rothman is saying is that that spare capacity is really more like only 2 million barrels per day out of Saudi Arabia and the UAE, and that the UAE, as a side note, just got bombed by Iran. Just got bombed. One of its port facilities that I believe is used for exporting oil, in fact, I'm sure of it, it's the facility that's used to bypass the Strait of Hormuz, just got bombed. So, and the UAE seems to be on the verge of declaring war against Iran. That's not going to go well for the UAE, but none of this supports the idea that there's going to be all kind of abundant oil flowing anytime soon, which means that the so-called oversupply projections of the 2026 oil marketplace were based on things like this calculation of excess capacity out of the UAE and Saudi Arabia. And that's done now. That's blown up, at least the UAE is. I mean, the Saudis still have lots of different ways to export oil, but every single method is under attack right now. So again, the oil is actually in an emergency drought, not a glut. And what Rothman was saying in a recent interview is that we were going to face an oil supply crisis in late 2026, even without the war with Iran, that the IEA's numbers were wrong and that the degradation of the oil wells was catching up and there really wasn't much excess capacity, even though world oil demand remained very strong and in some countries was rising dramatically as they were becoming more industrialized with more transportation, etc. The bottom line is that we were already about to face an oil problem, you know, a supply chain problem in late 2026. And then with Trump's Operation Fury added on top of that, all of a sudden that accelerated it to the present. Now we have an oil emergency that is about to kick in with ramifications on a global scale that will almost certainly lead to global economic depression. So why do we know that? Because number one, the tanker traffic is all interrupted. Thousands of tankers are still stranded in the Persian Gulf, and despite Trump's new promise that we're going to escort them out of the Persian Gulf somehow, that's a fantasy, and it hasn't happened, and it's not going to happen because Iran will just bomb the ships trying to do that. Iran has already announced to everybody, don't you dare go through the strait without our permission. Secondly, because of this inability to load and export oil, you're going to have oil well shut-ins. And the shut-ins, it's a shutdown of the oil wells, and I already talked about how that will cause permanent throughput production loss of those oil wells up to 30%. But again, you don't know. It's a case-by-case basis. Depends on how long it's shut down, depends on the chemistry under the ground, depends on lots of factors, but you won't know until you try to start them back up. But the longer this war goes on, the longer those wells stay shut down, and for sure, the worse the recovery gets. So it's not just that the oil is missing every day, it's that the future oil is missing every day that this goes on. The future oil situation is going to be a lot worse. On top of that, this war has resulted in a lot of damage to oil export infrastructure. Not only have Israel's attacks on Iran damaged oil infrastructure, but Iran's attacks on the neighboring Gulf state nations in retaliation has also severely damaged a lot of oil infrastructure, including what I just mentioned in the UAE. But also outside of oil, just considering gas, Qatar Energy has taken a lot of damage. Bahrain just declared a state of emergency. And exports out of Kuwait are at least partially halted the last time that I checked. And all these countries are declaring force majeure in one way or another because they can't meet their export requirements. And then on top of that, if there's going to be further U.S. attacks on facilities such as Karg Island, which is where most of Iran's oil is actually exported, then that will hamper the situation dramatically for the world. The world will potentially lose out on millions of barrels per day for a period of years. And if that happens, then global, a global depression is a certainty, and global starvation is also a certainty, although there's a delay period before that kicks in. But you'll start to see mass famine and hunger in late 2026 and then throughout 2027. It's going to get bad. So how bad? Well, if you look at the numbers just from March, the Persian Gulf producers of oil, that's Oman, Bahrain, Qatar, Kuwait, Iraq, UAE, and Saudi Arabia, they are losing, according to Rothman, they've lost 12 million barrels per day of crude oil and natural gas liquids. 12 million barrels per day. Goldman Sachs also ran their own analysis of this, and they said it's even higher. They said it's 14.5 million barrels per day, or about a 57% reduction of where it should be. Now remember, this includes both crude and natural gas liquids, so it's more than just 20 million barrels that we're talking about here. It's, it's more like around 30 million barrels total. But this is a huge decline that has not been resolved, and it adds up every day. And when you add to that the fact that Ukraine drone strikes have targeted Russian oil infrastructure, both refineries and export facilities and storage facilities also, that we're talking about a global attack on oil supply that continues to mount up and get worse every single day. And you've heard the term like an air pocket in the fuel lines. Well, this is an air pocket in the oil supply of the world. This air pocket is now, what is it? It's in its third month. And given that there's no solution to this war in sight right now, this air pocket could end up being 6 months. And even when you try to turn everything back on, like I said, you might not get full production. You might have lost 20 or 30% of production. So in effect, there's going to be some level of an air pocket that lasts for years. For years. I mean, Qatar Energy, for example, said it will be 3 to 5 years to repair the two natural gas trains that have already been destroyed, two out of their 14. So this situation literally, physically, cannot be resolved overnight. It's going to play out, and the longer the war goes on, by far the worse the long-term ramifications will be. And it's also worth pointing out here something that Rothman said in the interview, is that, the U.S. is the second largest crude importer in the world after China. We import a lot of oil. It's the heavier feedstocks, like Venezuelan type of oil, compared to the light shale crude that is produced largely in the United States. We export a lot of that, but we import, 6.5 million barrels per day or something like that. We import a lot of oil every day that goes through our refineries. Well, that oil is going to become more scarce and more expensive. And that's one of the reasons why fuel prices are rising so quickly right now. And I don't know if that number is exactly 6 million barrels per day, but it's something in that range. It's millions of barrels per day that we import into the United States. Now, remember that this oil, after it's refined, becomes diesel fuel. And diesel fuel is the single most important fuel source for the U.S. economy and arguably for economies like Australia and Canada and New Zealand, etc. You got to have diesel because it runs the trains and it runs the trucks. If you don't have the diesel, you know, your economy shuts down. And diesel will become incredibly scarce. And yet, because the Trump administration wants to try to manipulate the prices and make everything look better than it is, he will keep, you know, through his speech and his tweets and also some market manipulations and maybe releasing more strategic reserve oil, he will try to keep diesel prices low, even though right now they're almost $6 a gallon on average, or at least headed close to that. And it's really only high diesel prices that would send the appropriate signal for diesel conservation or companies using alternatives to diesel that would result in lower consumption. So in other words, the high prices are the solution to the shortage because it forces people to look at alternatives. But artificially low prices effectively encourage more consumption of a fuel that's going to be in short supply, making the shortage worse. So in other words, the Trump administration's manipulation of the price is going to send the wrong signal to consumers and companies, and they will end up burning through the lower supply more quickly than they otherwise would. Now, there's another huge problem in all of this, which is that even though the IEA helps coordinate the release of strategic petroleum reserves, and the U.S. is part of that, it can't even come close to making up for the loss of over 20 million barrels per day that would have otherwise been flowing through the Strait of Hormuz. So the U.S. can release like 1 or 1.5 million barrels per day. That's a drop in the bucket compared to the 20 million barrels that we're losing right now. And then, you know, the other millions of barrels per day that will be lost in terms of throughput once everything tries to restart. And so even though the IEA has arranged to release 400 million barrels of oil over, I think, a period of like 120 days or so, that's not going to make up for the loss, and it's not going to keep prices low. So eventually, we run out of strategic reserves. Eventually, all of the BS stops working, and prices will slingshot higher, along with extreme oil scarcity and diesel scarcity and kerosene scarcity, you know, jet fuel and all of that. And if you thought it was bad that Spirit Airlines went out of business and that other airlines are cutting back on tens of thousands of flights, just wait. That's going to get a whole lot worse. At the same time, there's not nearly as much investment in U.S. energy extraction and exploration as there used to be. Now, Rick Rule, for example, was citing the AFEs, or authorizations for expenditure on land that he has an interest in. And he was citing companies like ExxonMobil and Occidental and EOG. And he said that their rate of expenditures has, quote, fallen off precipitously, which means there's not nearly as much exploration taking place. And by the way, shale wells, they lose 74% of production in the first year. 74% of production. So, I mean, wow, you have a new shale well rolling and you've taken out almost everything that it has in just 1 year. That's very different from oil wells, by the way. So you have to constantly invest, you have to constantly explore and drill and extract. And if that cycle stops, then you're going to end up contributing to a horrible shortage, which is exactly what is shaping up right now. So if you put all of this together, this is why, with rigorous examination, oil is likely headed towards in the range of $200 a barrel by the end of this year. Right now, Brent is trading at more like $110 a barrel. And in recent weeks, it's been as low as $90, and it's been as high as $126, something like that. It's going to go much higher from here. And the Trump administration and all the different manipulations they pull in the markets and so on can only hold off the price increase for a short period of time. Now, I wouldn't be surprised if oil goes over $200 a barrel this year. But a lot of it depends on how long this war goes on in the Middle East. So that's the number one driving factor of this. Secondly, as a disclaimer, I want to just say, hey, don't take this as investment advice. I am not encouraging you to invest in oil futures or any, you know, commodities at all. I don't invest in commodities other than just gold and silver. But oil is, you know, especially volatile right now, and these projections could change dramatically based on a couple of things. I already mentioned if the war ends, that will change things. But also, what if there's a global depression and there's a massive shutdown of transportation? Then that would really reduce demand for oil. And if the depression is bad enough, or if there's a cyber attack, grid down scenario, a nuclear exchange in more developed nations or something, you know, if there are some big die-off events, even the famine and starvation that we're talking about in 2027, it's not hard to imagine that that would reduce the number of people living, which would reduce the demand for transportation, which would itself reduce the price of oil sometime in 2027. So it's quite possible that oil could spike by the end of this year, but then oil prices could really drop as hundreds of millions of people die across the planet. And thus, I mean, we don't want to see that happen. We know there's a depopulation agenda underway. We know they're trying to kill off people like crazy, but we don't want to see that happen, even though it would bring down the price of oil. The thing is, most of those deaths would be in African and Middle Eastern and Southeast Asian countries. Countries like Bangladesh and Sudan and Yemen, maybe Nigeria, some deaths in Egypt or India. We're talking about countries that are extremely vulnerable, like right on the edge of famine on any given day. You know, the DR Congo, for example. So these countries is where there would be a lot of die-offs, and it's not clear how many people in those countries really use oil on a daily basis. Probably their energy consumption is a lot less than your or my energy consumption. So even a large global die-off like that might not reduce demand for oil that much. It's hard to say. I guess somebody could do projections on that, but I haven't done those projections. So take all of this with a grain of salt, you know. Make up your own mind of where you think this is going, and pray that we can keep everybody alive. Pray that we have enough fertilizer, enough food, enough energy to keep people alive. Even though clearly the globalists want the opposite. They want to depopulate the planet. That's their goal. And I think this is part of the way that they are working to do that. So, yeah. Keep that in mind. And by the way, it's a good idea to get prepared. Let me plug the sponsor of this podcast, which is the Satellite Phone Store. They can be found at sat123.com, sat123.com. And they offer not just satellite phones, of course, but solar generators, Faraday bags to protect your electronics. They have the solar panels. The bags are called dark bags, you know, protects against EMP and solar flares and things like that. Plus the satellite phones, which will be very important if the power grid goes down or if telecom goes down. So check them out, sat123.com, and I think you'll be glad that you did. They're helping people get prepared all over the world. In the meantime, you might want to buy some diesel fuel, you know. Hey, I'm still using diesel that I paid $2.50 for because I stocked up on it a while ago, you know. Diesel stores a long time. I add all the long-term storage additives and so on, and I've used diesel that's 10 years old that I've stored myself. And yeah, you'll go through the fuel filters a little bit faster, but you could stock up on those too. And you know, your water separators, you might have to separate the water more frequently because you'll get condensation and water in the diesel a little bit. But you know, modern fuel lines all have water separators in them. So you just have to do a little bit more maintenance. As long as it's not all sludgy, and what causes the sludge is bacteria. And so the first thing you should do when you store diesel, if you have a 500-gallon tank of diesel, you put in this bactericide into it, which kills the bacteria, or at least you might think, well, really, do bacteria grow in diesel? Yes, they do. They grow in the water that condenses on the surface of the diesel, and then, believe it or not, they can use some of the hydrocarbons, and they end up clumping and gumming up the diesel. So that's why you add the bactericides in order to give it a longer storage life. And again, I've run diesel that's 10 years old without any problems, just by storing it correctly. So anyway, diesel's kind of expensive right now, though. Will it get cheaper? Probably not. So it might be worth buying it now rather than waiting until later and hoping everything gets resolved. Now, if the war ends and the strait opens back up and the ships start flowing again, it's still going to be months of high prices until the supply arrives. So be on the lookout, you know, do what's right for you, make your own decisions about preparedness or fuel or what have you, but be ready because it's going to get pretty ugly for absolutely the rest of this calendar year and well into 2027 as well on top of that. So check it all out, stay informed. You can follow me at brightvideos.com. You can follow my articles at naturalnews.com, and you can also follow me on social media. I'm on X at HealthRanger, or you can follow me on brighteon.social, where I'm also HealthRanger. So follow me there. I'll keep you posted as best I can. And by the way, special thanks to Dr. Chris Martinson for his analysis that also was a good foundation for me to research this story. So hey, it's a group effort sometimes, folks. Take care. Right now, more than ever, it's critical to eliminate counterparty risk. That's my belief, and don't take this as financial advice because I'm not your financial advisor, but when you want physical gold and silver in your hands or vaulted, professionally vaulted, insured, high security vault, etc., that eliminates that counterparty risk, which I think is an extreme risk right now. I think banks are going to fail and we're going to have bank bail-ins. The currency is failing every day, you know, kind of little by little because of all the money printing and the valuation erosion that's accelerating. Also because of what's happening in the Middle East, more and more countries are agreeing to sell oil in currencies other than the dollar. And the only way that treasury yields are kept low is by the Fed printing money and buying our own debt because there aren't enough international buyers to buy our debt anymore. So our country is like a snake eating its own tail financially. It's buying its own debt, and this is going to end badly. And when it does, in my opinion, those who hold dollars, even in bank accounts or in the stock market or whatever, they're going to be devastated by the losses. Gold and silver are the best way, in my opinion, to preserve your assets and make it through the coming storm. And the best place to get gold and silver is a company I've been working with, the original founders of the group, for 6 or 7 years now. Today it's called Battalion Metals, and you can reach them at metalswithmike.com. And the reason it's called Battalion Metals now is because they did a joint venture with Tucker Carlson. So Tucker Carlson is the co-founder of Battalion Metals. It's the same group I've worked with for years. And let me tell you about these people. They are pro-freedom, pro-liberty, pro-Ron Paul type of people. They respect your privacy. They understand the importance of your security, your privacy, and the importance of giving you gold and silver at the best possible competitive prices. So there's no bait and switch. There's no, you know, rigging. There's no weird coins like, here, have this 1.5 ounce thing that nobody knows what it is. They don't play games. Otherwise, I wouldn't promote them. This is the same company, medalswithmike.com, Battalion Medals. This is the same group that I recommend to my family, to my friends, and that I use myself. And I stack gold and silver every month, just a certain amount every month, and I have it vaulted with their vaults because I know I can trust them because they're professionals. They're high integrity people. They're not fly by night. They are the kind of people that you can trust. Again, otherwise I wouldn't even be associated with them. So when you want to get gold and silver in your hands and eliminate that counterparty risk, this is the way to do it. Just go to medalswithmike.com. You can see the prices right there online in real time at Battalion Metals, or you can schedule a call with them. Just use this button right here, schedule a call. And they are trustworthy, high integrity, knowledgeable people who can help you devise a strategy that's suitable for you. Just remember, I'm not your financial advisor. I can't give you an investment strategy personalized for you. You need to do that yourself with your own advisors. You can talk with Battalion Metals and they can help give you a lot of information and some planning as well. But make the best decision for you. And you're going to make it through this. You'll make it through the storm, even as other people lose the value of their dollars or their other investments. Gold and silver will make it through. And right now, in my opinion, gold and silver are still at an incredible buying opportunity in terms of price compared to where they're going to be represented in dollars in the near future. That's my opinion. Do your own research. Do what's best for you. And check it all out at medalswithmike.com. So thanks for watching. I'm Mike Adams, the Health Ranger. God bless you all. Take care.